What feels like a lifetime ago, 34 years to be exact, a very young, very green, rather small but quite noisy young minister arrived at East Shore, called by this congregation to be its associate minister. It was 1985, and the church had been through quite a bit of change leading up to that moment. Your senior minister, Leon Hopper, was still relatively new, and you were in need of a second minister to help with your growing Sunday school program. I was told that East Shore really wanted a seasoned religious education minister, someone who would bring a lot of experience to the job. But somehow the folks who fit that description were not available, not interested, or just not right. So in the summer of 1985, East Shore took a big risk. Its wonderful search committee, which included East Shore stalwarts Millie Malarkey, Barbara Elliott, and Walter Andrews, invited me to consider coming to serve as associate minister with a religious education portfolio. Yeah. And this is the me you got. At that time, oh, there I am. Oh, my goodness. Nothing like seeing yourself really big. Woo! Thank you to Ron Hammond. He had such a commitment to having photographs of all the professional leaders here at East Shore. And that picture is, now we can get rid of it, Ralph. Thank you very much. I'd rather you look this way, not that way. Well, when that around that same time, I had just graduated from Meadville-Lombard Theological School in Chicago and had just finished an internship in Rockford, Illinois. And I knew after living there for 3 years that the Midwest was not for me. I had grown up on the East Coast and would have been willing to go back there. But I also knew that at age 25, I wasn't ready to take on solo ministry. And I had met Leon Hopper when I was a student, and I liked him. And he must have liked me too. For when the search committee decided I would be its candidate for the associate minister position, Leon was fully on board. Now, I want to be absolutely honest with you, my friends. I was terrified. I remember driving across the country on my way here wondering what the heck I was doing. I had never lived so far away from my family. My experience with religious education was primarily that I had grown up Unitarian Universalist, and I was not yet ordained. But terror can have a way of focusing one's attention. When I arrived at East Shore, I was determined to make it work. I came into a church that was bustling with energy and eager to grow. There was a wonderful cohort of elders here, people like the late beloved Catherine Wensberg and Elliot Marple, who had been doing church for decades and knew what was what. There were a lot of substantive middle-aged folks who were the primary leaders of the boards and committees, and there was a wonderful group of young families who brought their kids, the baby boomlet, to church in droves. Now, I know for sure that many of you here today were not a part of East Shore all those years ago, but at least a few of you were. If you remember the old days and my ministry among you, can you raise your hands? Yeah. Well, it's so wonderful to see you. Thank you for coming out. And for those of you who only know me from that very old photo that hangs in the administration building, I hope you'll allow me a few moments to talk about the past. I believe what I have to say is relevant for the present and the future. My call to serve to East Shore was to serve the young people and families here, and it was a steep learning curve for me. When I came to East Shore, I was not that far out of my own childhood, so I could remember what it was like to be a kid in UURE classes. But I didn't have my own kids, and I had to learn from many of you how to engage with yours. I learned the hard way. You may have noticed I'm not a natural. But I'm so grateful to all of you parents who called me out when I was unkind or thoughtless, as I was sometimes. And I learned because of the way I saw many of you engage with your own and others' kids. You taught me the value of a truly multi-generational community, something I took into my ministry long after I left East Shore. One of my favorite memories of this time was when one of Mary and Doug Anderson's sons started calling me the little grown-up. I have always loved that. It was a perfect description of me and my relationship with the kids here. I used to say it was in about the fourth grade that the kids started outgrowing me. And in the first service, we had both of the Riley kids, Michaela and Asia, who are just giants. They're, you know, they're 5'8", 5'9". I think Michaela might be 6 feet tall. And honestly, they probably outgrew me in the third grade. So I was the little grown-up. But little though I was, these kids, these wonderful kids, now adults, and their parents, many of you, taught me what it meant to be grown up in beloved community. And they and you showed me that congregational life is always for more than just adults. Kids get so much out of it too. My hope is that you still remember that all these years later. Kids will tell you they hate going to church and they don't understand what it's for. And years later, many of them will be so grateful that they learn values and beliefs that matter in this place, with these people, with you. Yes, it can be discouraging that too many of our young people grow up in the church only to leave it. And that doesn't make it any less valuable. East Shore has a long history of excellent religious education for children and youth. And I challenge you to continue that legacy far into the future. Now I'm going to tell you another memory, that one that isn't quite so happy. After my first couple of months, and I'm going to say that again, after my first couple of months at East Shore, I preached a sermon on Advent. A few days after I did, the board president came to see me in my office, which at the time was in a completely separate building way over there. And I will never forget the words he said to me that day as he sat in my office. He said, "I don't care what everybody is saying, Barbara. I support you." Huh? I didn't even know what he was talking about. But I learned. Turns out my more spiritual approach to worship didn't sit well with some people. The fact that in my sermon I talked about something that I'd never experienced was somehow understood as something a minister shouldn't do. Others felt that I was too young and flighty to have anything meaningful to say, while others took issue with how I dressed and the pitch of my voice. I sat in my office absolutely stunned, hurt, confused, and sad, too. It was a very low point in my early time here, and I was uncertain what to do. Such a response to ministers, particularly unorthodox ministers, and in 1985, just being young and a woman in ministry was unorthodox. Such a response is sadly all too common. We Unitarian Universalists have a love-hate relationship with our clergy. In my experience here and at every other church I have served, lay people can be horribly critical and even cruel to their ministers. And I was not immune to that criticism and cruelty. My first couple of years of ministry at East Shore were tough, and some of the folks here were honestly mean enough to me that I would sit in my office and cry. I don't say this to upset you or invite you to feel sorry for me. Rather, I think it's important, as one who loves this church inordinately, for me to tell you the truth. Like every Unitarian Universalist congregation I've ever served, you were hard on me, and frankly, hard on all your ministers. I don't think you meant to be. I don't think folks usually do. And yet it was deeply painful to me. Thankfully, Leon Hopper, one of the best human beings ever to grace our planet, supported me and helped me to understand what I needed to do to get better at this hard and challenging work. For yes, I had a lot to learn. There was much I needed to do to become better at this work. He also called some of the lay people here on the carpet, kindly and graciously, of course, and invited them to give me some time to grow and to not expect perfection. And some of you, God bless you, had enough faith to work with me and with each other to help East Shore become more accepting and understanding. I am grateful, even as I still bear some scars from those hard times. But as the pop song goes, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I grew strong in your presence. And for that, I am always and forever grateful. I want to change gears now and tell you one final memory and reflect on what it might mean today. A year or two into my ministry here, I got a phone call from a Catholic layman I had met briefly at a Church Council of Greater Seattle event that Leon had taken me to. This Catholic was one of the leaders of the Peace Task Force, and in a blunt way I would come to know very well, said to me, was right over here when the offices were over there. I remember being on the phone and this guy going, "We need a woman on our team, and the fact that you're a young minister makes it even better. Will you join us?" I have to admit, I almost said no. At that point in my career, I felt a bit like a prized animal in the zoo. "Oh, you're a woman. You're a minister. You're young. How cool." It got a little old after a while. But at the same time, I was looking to get more involved in justice issues, and this seemed like a good place to do it. Before long, I became very active in social justice ministry, and some of you may remember those days. I got myself arrested at a protest during the Iran-Contra scandal. I supported the folks here who took a family into sanctuary, and I took part in peace events with many in the interfaith community. And during that time, I got to know a lot of Seattle area religious leaders, including the late, great Roman Catholic Archbishop Raymond Hunthausen. He and I were not friends, but we had a respect and appreciation for each other's leadership. Toward the end of my ministry at East Shore, the situation in the Middle East was heating up, and George H.W. Bush, in the winter of 1990, essentially announced that there would be a war and it would start on a certain date. At this point, I was the chair of the Peace Task Force, and because of my connection to the Archbishop and my role at the Church Council, I was tasked with helping to plan and lead what was to become the largest peace march in the country. From the pulpit of St. James Cathedral in Seattle, I spoke to thousands of people who gathered to march. When we left St. James and marched to St. Mark's Episcopal a mile away, we drew the attention of the world. And at the same time, I knew that people I cared very deeply about, in particular Peggy Phillips and Mark Norelius, who had already been called up to serve in the Air Force, would be going to war. And there were others in the congregation who were veterans, active or reserve military, or had kids or family members who were serving. The church leadership, including Leon, me, and the board, made a critical decision. That same week as the Peace March, we decided to hold a gathering of everyone who just wanted to talk about what was going on in a caring and non-judgmental way. Dozens of people met in what was then the new religious education building. And in a darkened space, we lit candles, we told stories, we laughed, we cried, and yes, we prayed together. We made a commitment that night that no matter where we were on the spectrum of opinions about this war, we would not abandon each other. We were a church community, and that mattered more than anything else. It was an absolutely pivotal moment in my development as a minister. Since then, I have been on the front lines of other such moments, including in Colorado at the time of the Columbine shootings and outside of Washington, D.C. on 9/11. Each time I was tempted to demonize people who might not share my all too certain beliefs about what was right and what was wrong, I remembered that night at Eshore, and I allowed my heart to soften. In this day and age of religious life within our faith, and frankly in others as well, we continue to face complicated social and political challenges that call us to put our beliefs into action. And yes, as Unitarian Universalists, we are called to live out our beliefs. I would call it our theology that all creation is connected in one great unity, and at the heart of that unity is the great spirit of love. These beliefs invite us to deep reflection on the issues of the day and challenge us to learn and grow and become the best people we can be. And we are also called to be compassionate and caring with each other as we find our way along this path. Becoming better people day by day is just hard. We are conditioned by our families, by communities, by our culture in ways we can't always see, and the journey toward wholeness is long, and it takes time. Finding the patience and kindness to allow each other to make mistakes, pick ourselves up and try again, then make more mistakes, and then do better is damn hard. We're going to get mad and frustrated. We're going to hurt feelings. And we're going to break hearts. All of this is true. But I would challenge you, as one who has spent a lifetime in this faith and who learned how to be a minister in this church, to trust that you are up to the task. Don't give up just because the work is hard. Don't lose hope just because it can take a long time. Being a liberal church in the world is not for the faint of heart. Gird your loins, my friends. Look at you. Look at you. After all these years, you're still here, blessing the world with your gifts. Keep doing it, beloved ones. It matters to your neighbors. It matters to your members and friends. It matters to your kids. And it matters to me. 34 years ago, you took a chance on a noisy, small, green, opinionated, but rather talented young minister. She learned so much in those 6 pivotal years of her life among you. And she stands here today, grateful, blessed, and powerful. because you helped her and taught her how to be the best that she can be. I hope, dear ones, that I returned the favor. I love you, and I always will.